living like a hood.
Europeans loved us when we helped liberate them in 1945. Then they complained that we overwhelmed them with hamburgers and Coca-Cola. During the Cold War, they tolerated us as the lesser of two evils. After September 11th, they wept for us, briefly. But the tears turned to anger when we invaded Iraq.
And now Europeans don't love us like they used to do. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday morning, August the 27th. And that clip you just heard is from a documentary that airs tonight on Wisconsin Public Television. And our guest this hour is the producer-director of it, The Anti-Americans, A Love-Hate Relationship, which takes us to Dublin and France and Poland and Great Britain to gauge the European view of the United States.
Why do Europeans, why are we so ungrateful to a country that has never threatened us? That's one view. The other view is, why should we snuggle up to an imperialist warmongering power?
It was our first evening in Europe, and we were in a Dublin pub listening to people talk about America.
I love Bugs Bunny, the original Dixieland jazz band, New Orleans, the fall in Vermont, all these kind of things. But I feel I'm entitled to distance myself from the atrocity and the stupid atrocity that is American foreign policy.
We welcome in Luis Alvarez, producer-director of the PBS documentary, The Anti-Americans, A Love-Hate Relationship. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And please include your first name and your community with your email. The Anti-Americans, A Love-Hate Relationship airs as part of the series America at a Crossroads. It'll be on tonight at 9 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Television's HD, or High Definition Channel. Luis Alvarez, a Milwaukee native, by the way, joins us. Good morning.
Hey, Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks a lot for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Let me just add that it's actually going to be statewide tomorrow night on the regular channels for those who don't have high definition. It's going to be 10 o'clock Tuesday night for Wisconsin Public TV.
Well, thank you very much for clarifying that. I didn't have that information, so now
that's
we know.
Okay. It'll be 9 o'clock in Milwaukee tonight, so it's a little confusing.
Check your local listings.
There we go. Welcome to the world of public television.
Well, it was really quite an entertaining hour when I thought, gee, I'm going to hear a bunch of Europeans bashing Americans, but it was quite funny. Really, you found yourself the very first night you were there in Dublin a debate on why they hated Americans.
Well, it's a little bit of a documentary trick. We knew that was going to be the topic, and we arranged to be there. We had no idea what would happen. And sure enough, you know, it was a little bit in microcosm the way Europeans feel about America. There was, as the guy said, you know, I love Bugs Bunny, and I love the fall in Vermont, and I hate Guantanamo and all those sorts of things. I think what we were surprised at was, and this was in Ireland, which is supposedly one of the more laid-back, friendlier folks in Europe, and there was really a lot of animosity towards America. Because if anybody said anything good about America, they would get booed down. Yeah. And that was a bit of a shock for us.
and yet it was even a little bit more distinct in France.
Well, France, of course, you know, people say, why did you choose those particular countries? You know, England and France and Poland and Ireland. And we said, well, you had to go to France because they're the best anti-Americans anywhere in Europe. I mean, it's really part of their DNA. And sure enough, you know, you don't even have to scratch the surface. You just go up to people at random on the street and anti-Americanism comes out. What's interesting to us, and this is kind of a leitmotif through the whole hour, is that it's not as simple as people saying, oh, you know, you're warmongers or you're fat or you're, you know, whatever criticism they wanted to lob at us. Because while they're saying these things, they're wearing Levi's and they're listening to, you know, Elvis or 50 Cent or any sort of kind of cultural export that America's famous for. So it's a real mix. And that's why we have the subtitle, A Hate-Love Relationship.
Yeah. I think I have a clip of someone in France saying or fat and dumb or something along those lines. Hold on.
Americans are the ideal enemies for the French. You know, the French want to be the voice that gives another possibility. They are against the world becoming American. Definitely, definitely, definitely. That would be a disaster because they will lose any significance, any mission, any function in the rest of the world.
There is a need to show France is at least equal or better, and that means the United States is bad. They are slightly less intelligent, less, you know, they understand the world less. So the big thing is saying, oh, we don't want to do it the American way. Anything the American way is like an insult.
So is there some jealousy then here, Louis?
Well, what our travels taught us is that you have to remember that the French and the Americans both had their revolutions around the same time, and both of them have set themselves up to be the ideal republic. You know, the American, you know, that's part of what America likes to do. It likes to talk about how we have the best system of government. But the French do the same thing, but they're not the same system of government. And so the French see it as this kind of intellectual rivalry. And guess what? They look around and they're losing. I mean, France, the French language, which, you know, 50, 75 years ago was the language of diplomacy, is pretty much all but gone. It's been replaced by English. The language of business is English. And so they're a proud culture with, you know, amazing things in their past. And so, yeah, they don't like to see these people who they regard as upstarts and not very cultured upstarts getting the better of themselves.
Hey, but it sounded as though your travels to Poland, that the Poles like us.
Well, that's what we thought. We went to Poland, and everybody was telling us before we went, oh, you know, the Poles, you know, they hate the Russians, and they love America, and they associate, you know, America with Ronald Reagan and, the, you know, getting rid of the Iron Curtain. And we went there, and yes, there is an enormous affection for that part of America, essentially, that stood up to the Russians and that continues to be for them a security umbrella. Because as one guy said to us, you know, who else is going to stand up to the Russian bear? You know, only America cares. The Europeans don't care. They don't have the power, and they've abandoned us twice in the past. But then when you probe a little bit in Poland, what we really are to them is a cash cow. You know, they have a long tradition of sending people here to work, to live. Obviously, a lot of people stay, but a lot of people went back and forth, and they go back to Poland, and it used to be their dollar would take them, you know, let them buy beautiful houses and things in Poland. So what they really want is the opportunity to come and work here. It's not because of love for America. It's because, you know, it's an economic opportunity. So even there, it was a bit of a hate-love relationship.
Yeah,
they think we work too hard.
There was a taxi cab driver, I think, who you interviewed, who said, hey, the U.S. gives the people in French people all the visas they want to go over to the U.S. and they hate you, but here we like you, and you really limit the number of visas Poles can have.
This is a classic example of Americans, and frankly, I you know, understandably, didn't know about this issue. We got off the plane in Poland, and within, you know, like 2 hours, we got an earful from five different people in random about the visa problem. And we went, well, what visa problem?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know about the visa problem? Well, the visa problem is that the American government has rationed the number of tourist visas that they give to the Poles, because they essentially suspect that Poles are going to come over on tourist visas and then overstay their visas and then work here illegally. So they've rationed the Poles, and the Poles feel like, wait a minute, we have supported you. We've sent troops into Iraq as part of the coalition. We spent all our zlotys, our defense zlotys, on buying American planes and upset our European allies because we didn't buy European planes, and this is how you reward us? So that's another kind of thing that promotes anti-Americanism. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's just one of those things that obsesses the Poles, and Americans, of course, are not even aware of any of this.
Well, apparently another thing that obsesses the Poles is country music. Listen to this.
Unlike almost everyone we met in the West, the Poles were not especially interested in critiquing the American War on Terror or complaining about George W. Bush. Years of living with bad neighbors had left them eager for a powerful friend who would look out for them.
Polish politicians nowadays, they love to stress that we have a strategic partnership with the United States, which is true for us, that this is our main partner. But I don't think that this is true for President Bush, Clinton, or whoever would live in the White House.
We feel America is our big brother, but I'm not sure that America knows it has a little brother out there.
Wrong clip, but we'll play that one later. That was a good one, though, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's nothing bad in this movie.
But talk a little bit about – you went to some country music festival in Poland.
Yeah, well, we had part of what we were looking for were examples of America has enormous cultural power and cultural reach, and we were looking for examples of that. And in Poland, we found this wonderful example. It's called Picnic Country, picnic spelled P-I-K-N-I-K. And every year they have a huge country music festival in one of the prettiest parts of northern Poland. And essentially it's full of bands, some of which do covers of well-known American songs like Johnny Cash, but there's a whole industry of Polish country music songwriters who write country music songs in Polish about Polish concerns. And that for us is a perfect example of how cultural stuff travels across the world. Mm. And we found a guy who goes by the stage name of Lone Star, L-O-N-S-T-A-R, very nice guy, and who got his start under communism, had his songs censored. He would write songs about the open road, but the communist censors thought it was, critical of the system. And he sings songs, and for him, America was listening to Ernest Tubb on the Voice of America clandestinely when he was a kid in the 60s. And it's really quite poignant, and it's another side of the image that America projects to the world. It isn't just the guns and the economic power.
We're talking with Lou Alvarez, producer-director of the PBS documentary The Anti-Americans, A Love-Hate Relationship, which will be airing tonight and tomorrow on Wisconsin public television stations and Milwaukee public television stations. Check your local listings. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question or a thought about why much of Europe has a love-hate relationship with the United States. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon, John Munson in for Ben Marins after 5. John talking with a guest about America's junior officers fighting the war on the ground in Iraq and the experience making them, many of them, lose faith in their superiors, according to John's guest after 5 o'clock. We're talking about why so many Europeans have a love-hate relationship with the United States. Our guest is Louis Alvarez, producer-director of the PBS documentary The Anti-Americans, A Love-Hate Relationship. It airs as a part of the series America at the Crossroads. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. If you'd like to join in with a thought about this, Art in Green Bay is with us first. Hi, Art, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy.
Good morning.
Yeah, a couple of comments. One historical, comment about the future of Europe. Historically, had the French and the British done a little bit more to save themselves in the past against Hitler. The French in particular, which rolled over pretty much and just allowed it to happen, had they done a little bit more in that regard, then perhaps, the U.S. would not have had to get involved in that war, built up the military-industrial complex of the degree that it is, and then had the force to go about the world imposing its will, as they say, on others and worrying about the French wouldn't necessarily have to be worrying about our imperialism so much. The other thing is that for the future, if anybody is paying any attention to history, they're seeing the World War II scenario playing out all over again, but in slow motion with the Islamists. And basically what they're doing is just exactly what Hitler did, but just doing it over time. And spreading themselves through the use of the immigration or lax immigration policies, which are allowing any number of Muslims into Europe, which are breeding at about 8 children per family versus about 2 for your average French person, 2 to 2.5, I think it is.
You want to bring this back to why Europeans might hate the U.S.?
Yeah,
we lost you. What about his thoughts that the French and the British should have done more back in World War II, and then the U.S. wouldn't have had to save them?
Correct that there's a lot of kind of historical, you know, backstory here, you know, and it's true that World War II was a huge changing point. The war fought, they're the ones who had their cities leveled, and we're the ones who kind of walked away with the prize. But on the other hand, we also, in fact, you know, propped them up. And it is, in fact, the American defense shield that allowed them to build up their economies and bring themselves to where they are. So, you know, it's a very, very complicated process. One of the things that we've been interested in our filmmaking generally, and certainly in this film, is it goes beyond whatever the issues of the day are. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, it's because they hate George Bush or because they hate the war in Iraq, and then after, you know, if the Democrats take over, or simply if another president comes in and we're not in Iraq anymore, then they're going to love us again. Well, that's not really... History tells us that's not really what happens. If you go back 200 years, you can find the French and the British looking down their noses at America, each in their own particular way. I mean, the British are specialized in sort of condescending to us because they're the ones with the great history and we're the little newbies. And you can go back 150, 200 years and you can find people like Charles Dickens and Mrs. Trollope coming over and looking at America as this kind of uncouth, sort of horrifying place. That's not going to really change. You know, that was when Britain had its power. Now they don't have their power. They're still as condescending as ever.
Yeah, what about this? Mixed,
it's more with envy.
What about the special relationship that we have with England?
Oh, the magic word, the special relationship. It's another thing. It's like, I love it when I go over to a new place and people start talking about something that everybody there knows about that I don't know very much about. And in England, they keep on talking about the special relationship. And we were, what are you talking about? Oh, the special relationship between the UK and the US, going back to Winston Churchill and Roosevelt. And essentially, it means that the prime ministers are, you know, best friends. They're the best diplomatic couple in the world. And the British have tended to use it, the diplomatic class in England tends to use it as an example of, well, we don't have the power, but the Americans are our best buddy, so they're not going to do anything against our interests. And everybody else in England says, oh, you're just getting used because basically you're America's lapdogs. And that's sort of this eternal tension, and that's sort of what happened to Tony Blair because he became so identified with President Bush's actions in the war on terror.
Yeah.
And it made him extremely unpopular.
And you don't see this changing with a change in administration or a change in foreign policy.
Well, you know, here's the thing about America. America is the 800-pound gorilla in the world. We may be wounded or feeling bad these days. Things are not going super great for us, but we're still the most powerful empire in the world, and everybody else has to deal with us. And as long and that's not necessarily a position that goes along with people loving you. You know, they get along with you because they have to get along with you. And that's going to happen in England, even if you have a prime minister who keeps America more at arm length, as Gordon Brown appears to be moving in that direction in the UK. He's the new prime minister. He still is going to have to deal with us. There's still so much stuff going on. There's so much business and economy and cultural exchange and political need to stick together that they can't ignore us, but they will take pot shots at us forever.
Mm-hmm. Next, we go to Derek in Round Lake. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. As a person actually who actually wound up living in the European Union and also in the U.S., I think the love-hate relationship between European states depends also on a social strata, the basic level of education of people, and also understanding the history, as well as a resentment to the economic expansion of the American corporate world, where it comes to European Union and imposes its own ways of doing business, regardless of a political or social contract in those countries. So a lot of resentment is specifically recently is being espoused not only by political issues such as, you know, lack of consistency in the equal application of the American foreign policy, but it's also of economic policies where countries like in Europe, Western Europe, they see their social construct being undermined by the influence of the American corporate. And also what you see in Eastern Europe, where the variety of countries such as Poland, for example, they seem to be treating one love from one big brother to another. And I think people who do understand this power relationship in this part of the world, who constantly looking for some type of protection of their existence from the higher power, they tend to be basically bamboozled by the thought that, you know, that either U.S. or Russia, or whoever the superpower is at the time, would be really looking at the interest for small guys, while those corporations are really, and big countries are really in it for themselves.
Yeah, thanks, Derek. Louis?
Yeah, well, Derek pointed out something very interesting, which is that your response to America sometimes depends on what your social class and your social situation is in Europe. The university-educated elites are almost uniformly anti-American. They're the most anti-American. You go to France, and you know they're the most anti-American. They read their newspapers. They read are the most anti-American, and they're the most leftish. And at the same time, however, they're the ones who just love aspects of American culture. I mean, they're the ones who listen to Billie Holiday and read Allen Ginsberg and, you know, love James Dean, sort of beyond, more than we do. And then theoretically, when you go lower down on the scale and you go to, you know, factory workers and things like that, certainly in England, the working class is much more admiring of America because for them, America stands for a certain kind of equality that they don't see at home. If you're in England and it's a very class-ridden society, if you're in the working class, it's hard for you to get out of it. It's easier than it used to be, but it's still pretty hard. And they look at America and the image of America that gets projected, because they don't necessarily see it firsthand, is that, oh, a working class guy can actually do something. He's not locked into this, you know, age-old generational mold. So there's actually sort of an interesting, you know, mix. And that's part of what we liked about making the film, is that there are, it's not a black and white issue. It's just really, really gray all over. Mm-hmm.
Nobody in Britain wants to think they're playing second fiddle to America, either politically or culturally. It's especially vexing for members of the educated upper middle classes, who dominate intellectual life.
A fashionable dinner party in London, they would be patronizing about America, they would be leftish, they would try to deny that they were anti-American, they would say that they're just anti-Bush, that they actually love the American people. But by the American people, all they mean are the three college professors they've met and the six viewers of PBS.
Very funny. Chet in Appleton. Chet, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment, and that was that, you know, I've spent the last 10 years of my life in the U.S. Merchant Marine, and I've been all over the world, Europe, Middle East, you name it, and I want to thank your guest for doing this, because in the last 10 years I've seen, if you'll pardon the expression, the sea change that's taken place in all these different countries regarding the attitude towards the U.S. And we just need, be removed from our ignorance about the rest of the world. The world doesn't revolve around the U.S., but even from the pictures and the grade school maps, it just appears to do that way, to be that way. And I just want to say thank you for this special, and I guarantee you I'll be watching.
Louis?
Thank you, Jet. That's great. I mean, we try to, bring our viewers along with us when we do these films, and possibly and make it entertaining at the same time. I'm always struck. You know, I go over as a filmmaker, and I obviously think I know what I'm doing, and I come in with certain preconceived notions, but I like to keep an open mind because, I'm always surprised or enlightened or, you know, find out that things are actually more complicated than I originally thought. And so that's one of the pleasures of doing what I do. And, anything that we could do to expand knowledge is great. What's interesting about the feeling that people have about America is that each country we went to had different experiences. The French, who claim they think they know everything about America, never come here. Maybe they'll come to New York, and they think New York is kind of an extension of Paris anyway. So they love New York. When they found found out we were New York filmmakers, they were just, you know, oh, well, then you're one of us kind of thing. So they can make these pronouncements about America with complete impunity because they have no knowledge of what it's actually like to live in a place like Wisconsin or Mississippi or Nevada. They have no knowledge at all.
Yeah, that one. Go ahead. I was going to say there was a French woman you interviewed who said that all of America except New York is racist.
Yeah, and it's interesting because this is a woman in a small town, you know, the equivalent of a town like, you know, like Appleton or something like that, you know, it's a small town, you know, city. And she says, yes, you know, I think it's a very racist country, America, you know, except for New York, the whole country is racist. And when we show that to people who've traveled in France, they always yell back at her at the screen because the French, of course, have a huge problem with internal racism, you know, with their immigrants from their former colonies. But they don't see that. You know, it's one of these kind of the pot calling the kettle black. What was interesting is then you go to England, and in England, a lot of people have come to the States. They go to Florida, and you know, and they speak the same language. So there's kind of more understanding of certain aspects of American culture. And then you go to Poland, and in Poland, they don't go to New York. They go to Chicago. They go to Milwaukee. They know the heartland, and they have a different opinion yet again. So it was kind of fun to see that. The Poles actually had an interesting take. They thought that Americans don't know how to relax, which I thought was very interesting because they, in fact, are a very hardworking bunch of people. But they think Americans don't know how to kick back and enjoy themselves.
We don't go to those country music festivals, I guess, enough.
I guess not.
John in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, well, I think there's been a real sea change in the Europeans' attitude towards it since the end of the Cold War. Before the end of the Cold War, they could rationalize the things they didn't like about America with the fact that we were up against the Soviets and it was going to be a lethal missile exchange that would destroy them. So they could make excuses for us then. But since then, I think what, and didn't the polls bear me out, the unilateral militarism of the United States has denied international law since 1991. And what you've seen is, especially in Iraq, where the citizen populations of all the states in Europe opposed us going into Iraq, and at the last minute we denied the Security Council of the UN to say anything. George Bush said he would allow them to show their cards. He did not. And this is a kind of arrogance to international law that they hate and which I personally as an American despise because America is not above law. And when they see us abrogate the UN Charter, when they see us ignore the Geneva Convention, especially in a matter such as torture, when they see us get out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty, when they see us not honor the non-proliferation treaty, when they see us weaponize space, they know that democracy in an international sense cannot exist as long as we maintain this attitude. And to add to that, we sell more than half of all the weapons in the world, and we're involved in destabilizing efforts all over the place, selling weapons and nuclear material to places we shouldn't, like India. We're giving multi-billions to Israel, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia. That just happened in the last month. The point is, it goes on and on, and the key thing that I want to stress, though, is we are not really acting as honest actors in the UN, and that has got everybody scared.
Does it have Europeans hating us more, Louis?
Well, what there is essentially there's kind of two views of America, you could say, especially in a place like France. And on the one hand, there's this kind of an ideal America where John F. Kennedy is president and everything is wonderful and there's sort of, you know, blues men, you know, create great culture and you know, everything is good and wonderful. And then on the other hand, there's kind of the bad America. It's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. There's the bad America where, you know, people are tortured and there's renditions and, you know, countries are invaded and that sort of thing. And so right now we're living in the face of, as far as the Europeans are concerned, bad America. But they really yearn for the good America, this, which is equally, you know, both are essentially extreme views. And they're yearning for this kind of wonderful return to good America. And the French are really ready. The French are really ready to love us again on a certain level, you know. And in fact, when the Democrats took back the House and the Senate, you know, last November, the French immediately, of course, went to the opposite extreme and said, oh, everything's wonderful again. Everything is fine. Americans have come to their senses. You know, equally not really understanding the American American system. There's no question that the last 5 years have just been a disaster for us in terms of amity and getting along with the Europeans and realizing their worst fears. There's just no question about that. And on the other hand, when we were interviewing one of our professors, we were waiting to see him, and I took down one of a book that he had on the shelf, and it was from 1978, and it was a report on European-American relations, and I opened it up, and there were exactly the same complaints that the Europeans had about America in 1978 that they have now, you know, and it was about, yes, they didn't do the SALT Treaty, and it was all these kinds of things from the Carter administration, but it was exactly the same. They just swagger around, they don't consult with European allies, they do what they want, they're just trying to buy us up, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So this is my earlier point that essentially a lot of these feelings are just going to stay forever. It's just part of us being the big dog.
We are talking with Luis Alvarez, producer-director of the PBS documentary The Anti-Americans, A Love-Hate Relationship. In the documentary, we travel to Dublin and France and Poland and Great Britain to hear people talking about Americans. And we are welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. The program will air tonight on Wisconsin Public Television's HD channel and tomorrow night on all of Wisconsin Public Television and again tonight on Milwaukee Public Television. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
America is a very, very useful construct for us to ventilate our own inadequacies and frustrations with ourselves, because you're not going to attack us. You're going to be nice to us. You know, it's not like it's like a risky strategy being anti-American. You know, if you're Polish and you're anti-Russian in 1955, then that's a risky strategy. But here it's the cute whore, the Schlieffen's view, which is to be anti-Americanism has great rhetoric and no downside risk. So that's why it's embraced.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and that was a clip from the new PBS documentary, The Anti-Americans, A Love-Hate Relationship. We're talking with the producer-director of the documentary, Luis Alvarez, who happens to be a Milwaukee native. So, Louis, America's just maybe a handy scapegoat for Europeans?
Well, you know, it's like as we are the 800-pound gorilla, and so they're going to throw banana peels at us. What we thought sort of interesting, especially in France, was they were counting the days until China cleaned our clock. They were waiting and said, you guys have another 10 years, and then the Chinese are going to run everything. And and my response to that is, I don't think you're going to want to live in a world run by the Chinese. I think you're going to miss us. Mm-hmm. Rick, we just have a different way of projecting power.
We go now to Rick in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, Europeans aren't anti-Americans per se. They're anti the jingoism, the exceptionalism, the city on the hill. You know, the thought that the United States is the center of the universe. That's you know, and everything that John said before. But you know, they can discern what's good because the BBC and Radio France International, for instance, have the largest collections of Afro-American jazz in the world. Because at that time, Josephine Baker, Dizzy Gillespie, all those people couldn't make it in the United States, so they went to Europe, and there they were lionized, where in the United States they had to sit at different tables and, you know, go to the back of the bus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they looked at the horror of the Vietnam War. You know, I think of the Australian journalist John Pilger, you know, who covered the Vietnam War, and Peter Arnett, and all those people, you know, they know that, you know, the ugly side, the ugly American, that's, you know, what they criticize. They're not anti-American people. You know, I think
let me get our guest in on this, Rick. Not anti-American people, but You're not the center of the universe.
Well, yeah, that's Rick. That's an excellent point. One of the issues that that Europeans have with America is precisely what you said. They think that we are incredibly self-centered, and there are things that drive them crazy, partly because they used to do it themselves, and they think they've moved beyond it. The jingoism, the nationalism, the USA is number one, the flag waving, the religiosity. I mean, these are things that for the Europeans remind them of 75 years ago in Europe, and what did it bring? It brought two world wars, and it's completely devastated them for a generation. So they say, geez, why are you guys doing that? You know, we've taught you. Actually, it's more than 75 years ago. I mean, the religious wars in Europe, they finally stamped them out in the 18th century, and then they were able to kind of progress and become, you know, world powers. And so they just don't get that with us. You know, they don't get the fact that America has got this huge religious component to it. Europe is a continent where nobody goes to church anymore, you know, and that's part of the issue that one of the earlier callers raised about Muslims. It's not just the demographics, it's the fact that there's now a new kind of religiosity in Europe that's coming into the fore, and they've sort of gotten out of the habit of dealing with strong religion. So that's, a lot of people said that to us. They said, you know, America has these wonderful ideals and you've done these wonderful things, but why does it have to be accompanied by the flags and the battleships and the kind of talking, you know, puffing yourself up kind of thing? Yeah. And they saw George Bush as the embodiment of that. So what I think is hard to understand, I think it's sometimes hard to understand for Americans who may feel the same way, is that that is in fact very much a part of who we are as a country. Yeah, and you can't just take it out of us.
Do you know if what Rick said is true, that various cultural, the BBC and Radio France saved all sorts of the good American culture, and that artists had a better chance there than they did here?
Well, it's complicated. I mean, what the French did in particular was they were sort of the first ones to spot that things like American jazz or film noir, you know, the detective movies of the 40s and you know, sort of pulp novels, you know, all those Dashiell Hammett type books. The French were the first ones to spot that was true art. Americans, you know, who liked to read it, thought it was just pop culture and kind of tossed it aside. And the French treated it like it was, you know, gold. Mm-hmm. And they nurtured it. And then finally, after 20 years, it came back to America. Now Americans treat mm-hmm. Raymond Chandler as art as well. And so Rick is correct, certainly in terms of, you know, racial politics, that in the 50s, you know, starting from the 20s and moving on, you know, African-American artists found that they could go to France and be treated, regally, and no more Jim Crow. On the other hand, a lot of them came back because they were essentially in a foreign culture. It wasn't American culture. They weren't being nurtured by, what nurtured their art. And so it was a very tough, you know, sort of a tough situation. But absolutely, the French, you get into a taxi in Paris, and there's a good chance that your taxi driver is listening to Billie Holiday or something like that. And I'm a big Billie Holiday fan, so, you know, how can you hate a culture that, you know, that loves our best fruits so much?
Bryce in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I guess I would say this is I'm trying to understand, I guess, you know, I'm not knocking your project, but the need for, you know, Americans to kind of find and seek this global acceptance. I think it was Truman that said, you know, if you want a friend, get a dog. You know, and that's what I'm saying, that, you know, we can't make the policies that, you know, on war that we do and everything else, and in essence become this world power and then expect to be everybody's best friend. I mean, we have to make some unpopular decisions, but with that, we also have made some very, you know, popular advances throughout the world. And I think that, you know, if you could take that same survey in Milwaukee, and you're probably going to get the same results as you would in Poland or anywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm. That makes— Yeah, Louis?
Yeah, well, that's a really good point, Bryce, and I don't disagree with it. I think that part of having power is that you have to know how to use power. However, as we've discovered the last few years, that we actually can't do it alone. You know, we tried, and we actually can't. We actually need support. And to not be able to at least appear to be listening, I think, to people who essentially are on our side, I think is a mistake. And that's one of the reasons we think that, you know, people ought to watch the film. It is not a film. It's not a film that's that bashes America, and it's not a film that says America's number one. It just simply says that, listen, these are some of the concerns people have. And I don't know why we wouldn't want to listen to them and then make our own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just we can't do it all ourselves. And, in fact, if you look at kind of the enemies to our way of life that are out there in the world, the Europeans are not at the top of that list of enemies of our way of life. They're the good guys. So that's part of what's going on here.
Thank you, Bryce. Steve in Madison is with us now. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a quick comment and then a question. My new Russian sister-in-law came over to Florida for the first time this month, and one of the things that she noticed was all the American flags flying everywhere. And when I stopped, I visited them in Germany a number of times, and when I stopped to think about it, I thought, you know, I don't see at least German flags. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Also, I did have a question. Not wanting to be a monolingual American, when I've gone overseas, I've always tried to speak in the language of the people as much as I could. Does that really help as far as the perception of Americans go?
Louis?
Yeah, Steve, that's great. Let me just talk about the first thing about the flags. Is that, yes, you don't see German flags anywhere, except if, for example, if it was the World Cup and Germany was playing, mm-hmm. then you'd see the German flags. That's part of what they feel they've moved beyond. They've moved beyond that heavy duty, like, I have to tell you how wonderful my country is mentality. On the other hand, they're going through their own kind of self-doubts because they've all come together in this European Union, but nobody feels like they really have a stake in the European Union. You know, they think it's being run by bureaucrats in Brussels. It has this kind of bland flag. Nobody has real emotional attachment to it. So they're not quite sure what's going on. As far as the language goes, I think it really depends on the culture. The French are famous for not really speaking English very well. You try to speak French to them, but they answer you in English, which is their way of saying, I'm not even going to dignify your French with a response because it's not good enough. But generally, I find speaking wherever you go, and I've traveled all over the world, wherever you go, any attempt to speak in the local language is really appreciated, even if it's two words. And in some places, like in Japan, if you know how to say hello, they make a huge fuss over you. You know, it's sort of embarrassing. It's like you're 5 years old or something. You know, generally, you know, in the 50s, there was that image of the ugly American, you know, tourist. And I found that actually is really pretty outdated, that most of the tourists going to Europe nowadays are actually quite sensitive to the local cultures and interested. And so, you know, it's like little things, every little thing helps, you know. But generally, people on the street, you may go into a bar, and if people have had a couple of drinks and they find out you're American, they might want to pick a fight with you over Guantanamo. But generally, people are very nice.
Interesting. Well, that reminds me of a story I just read in our local Sunday paper in the travel section about a community in France that is near Normandy and, you know, the beaches of World War II that caters to Americans and lots of, you know, English speaking, and they have the American flag out, the British flag out, the Canadian flags are flying in this French community, and they really are very friendly to English speakers, I suppose, in part because their economic livelihood depends on it.
Yeah, I don't know about that particular place, but I do know that the town where we went to southern France, where people were fairly negative about America, also every year has a little parade, and they bring out their old World War II artillery and their jeeps, and they, you know, sort of old guns that are American made, and they sort of trundle them through the streets, and it's a little reminder of kind of the horrors that happened to them in the 1940s and who kind of came to their rescue. And not everybody recognizes that, but there's, you know, it's also a little bit, frankly, for the French, it's sort of embarrassing, you know, that they, in fact, couldn't defend themselves and they needed help. And they needed help from who? The Americans. And that's embarrassing. And I think that adds to the friction a little bit.
Yeah, there was a cute, the travel writer recounted how one of the French guys in this town said, well, hello to my Canadian friends. And the travel writer and his group said, no, we're Americans. And the French guy said, well, you can't help that, with a smile. You know? Rich in Fox Point. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for this program. It's very interesting. On Ben Maron's show back about a year ago, I read there was a guest on there by the name of Jeremy Rifkin, who wrote a book called The European Dream. And it kind of echoes from an economic standpoint what your guest is saying. And what I got out of the book was the Europeans think we in America think I, and I think that kind of sums it up in a short sentence. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Louis?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Rich, that's a good point. I don't know if it's as simple as that, but there is definitely a European sensibility which is different from Americans. We are a nation of, official at least, of, you know, go it alone, do it yourself. Of course, there's lots of people in the United States who aren't comfortable with go it alone and do it yourself, but the culture here kind of promotes that. And in Europe, these are kind of sort of social democratic environments where there is a sense that, for example, of course we have national health care. I mean, why wouldn't we? That's what we need to do. And in America, a lot of people, as we know, that's a big debate, and you know, a lot of people feel that way, but then a lot of people feel equally that that's a mistake. The problem is neither system is perfect. You know, the Europeans have, there's a lot of great things about living in Europe, and there's a lot of great things about living in America, and but both of them have all sorts of inefficiencies and strange anomalies about them. But they are different. They are different cultures. And part of what we're trying to understand in the movie is whether or not that's changing. You know, is the younger generation more comfortable with American-style business practices, for example? You know, and I think the answer is yes. Whether they're ever going to be like us, however, I think is probably a mistake to think that. And that Americans like to think that people want to be like us, and that neglects kind of, you know, longstanding cultural backgrounds that preclude that.
Yeah. And what did you learn? I mean, the lesson you learned, Louis, from doing this documentary in our final minute?
Well, you know, basically that, you know, I don't think any of this is going to change. I think the Brits are always going to be snobbish towards us and the French are always going to be jealous. That, you know, we just need to keep talking and we need to keep, you know, making wonderful cultural stuff that will make them love us more. And we should, as I said before, we should be listening to what they have to say, and at least as advice, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. And we should be traveling over there and they should be coming here and learning more.
Do you think we'll change how we spell words like color, as the guy in the Brit pointed out in the documentary?
No, we color, C-O-L-O-R, of course, is the way to spell it. Those U's are just some sort of atavistic remnant of an ancient culture.
There you go. All right. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Louis Alvarez, producer, director of the PBS documentary, The Anti-Americans, A Love-Hate Relationship. It airs tonight on Milwaukee Public Television, on Wisconsin Public Television's HD channel, and statewide tomorrow night. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.